it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Buenos dias, chicas y chicos. Hello and welcome, a very warm welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts, one court for life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about the network, go ahead and check out evergreenpodcast.com. So this is the inaugural season of the Joy of Paddle podcast. And to start with, we're going to do an episode once every fortnight. Episodes will drop every other Wednesday at 12 noon London time. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and review. So this first episode is a special one in that it's with my father and my brother William, with whom I spent many a fabulous hour playing, laughing, and sweating on a paddle court over the years. My father has a legitimate claim to be one of the first ever paddle players, as he played on the very first Corcuera court in Acapulco, as you'll find out. And my brother William, among other family members who love to play paddle, is a far better player than I am, based out of Madrid. Please enjoy. Game on. Vamos! And the Joy of Paddle. Welcome, my father and my brother. So we are a paddle tennis family, bona fide paddle tennis family. And so I wanted to invite both of you to talk about your trip, your route to paddle. So, Pa, let's start with you, as you're the doyen of the family and the doyen of our origins into paddle. What was your route into paddle?
Well, through tennis, of course. And I used to go to Marbella, lovely place, and there weren't even many tennis courts in those days in Marbella, let alone paddle tennis courts. And the one tennis court that we sort of was nearby was at the Marbella Club, and it was a surface was tile, and there was a slight sort of bubble in the way the tile was lined for draining. It was a pretty pathetic court, and it didn't have a net. It had a string, so you was never sure whether the ball was over or under net, the so-called net. But it was really primitive, and so basically we ignored it. And then Alfonso came one day. The Prince Alfonso was the president, owner of the Marbella Club, who had just returned from a trip to Acapulco, and full of enthusiasm had taken the measurements of what he thought would be a better game to have at the Marbella Club than the tennis, which no one played there. And so he built this tennis court, or we didn't know what to call it, actually, this court that became a paddle tennis court, on the grounds of the Marbella, on the back of the former tennis court. And that was in 1974. It was a pretty strange looking thing, and no one knew quite what it was supposed to do. But then Alfonso showed us these rackets and little wooden rackets that no one had seen before. And I don't know where they came from, but he had them. And he started showing it around, and that's how one day one of my friends pointed me in the direction, you ought to try that. And I was a little skeptical at first, but I finally came around, and of course, the rest is history.
So who did you play with? I mean, at the Marbella Club, it was a very exclusive club. Were there other people you got to play with, or did you have to scramble and scrounge, as we have sometimes today, to find a good team?
Well, Alfonso had a wide circle of friends, and he was a great promoter of whatever he was promoting. If he decided he wanted to promote paddle tennis, then he knew who to go to, and he'd organize groups to come out and play, his pals. And some of them were pretty well known, so that would draw a crowd a little bit. And so they'd talk about it and among their friends, and that's how it sort of got going. And I suppose that I waited probably a year from the first time I saw the court until I actually stepped on a court and took a rattle in my hand. But once I did that, and once I found out how much fun it was, nothing could stop me. And I just dropped tennis and took up paddle. I wasn't very good, but I had fun.
You also had a very famous ball boy, as far as I recall.
Well, there was a wonderful young kid that Alfonso got to manage the use of the sign up for his time on the court, have towels for the guests of the club who played there, and have water and so on. And he was about 12 years old, and he was very little, and but he was a nice kid, and so when we needed a court, he'd be the guy. But at the end of the game, completely exhausted, we would leave the court, and there'd be Luisito sort of looking forlorn. And one time I asked him, hey, let's you and I hit some balls after the game. And so he gave him one of my rackets, and he started hitting. He could hit it. He obviously had been doing some practicing in the off hours. And so he hit it as enthusiastic. And so I made a point frequently of asking him to play if I could. Sometimes I couldn't because he was so exhausted. But that's how we became friends and stayed friends until a very long time.
And that, of course, Luisito Nieto, he becomes the manager, owner, I think, of the club in San Pedro de Alcantara.
Exactly.
So what about you, William? You are my younger brother, son of Victor. What was your route to paddle? Do you recall the beginning of your paddle days?
It was much later, of course, than that. But in Saint-Tropez, at the time, there was no paddle club. So the only way you could play was in private courts. And in Saint-Tropez, my uncle Olivier had a paddle court in his house. And some friends of her father had too. And I guess I saw pictures of me playing much younger than I can remember.
Isn't that true? Thank goodness for photographs.
At the time, yeah, you had printed photographs. Now it's everything digitalized. But at the time, yeah, I saw many pictures of me playing.
Well, and it's so cute to see you, of course, for me, when you were that small, you're a towhead, really very cute, small little boy, the racket, almost half your size. Yeah. And of course, you have turned into something of a different kind of paddle player and man. For both of you, when you look back at that very beginning of paddle, you obviously were in the very beginning of things. And to think of Olivier's court, William, it was a very different type of paddle court than it is today. Can you describe Olivier's paddle court?
Yeah, well, it was concrete walls all around. The fences were like not the same as today. And we're at the time, when I was little, we were playing paddle with the rules of ping pong. So we're doing first to 21. And we're changing serve every two serves. And there were no really rules. Every house had his own rules, and we're kind of trying to have fun. And I remember Olivier had, I think my first racket was a racket was called written ice on it. And then he was taking those rackets coming from the States. I remember one was called the Sorba Plus, which was the best one. Everyone was fighting to get that racket.
Yeah, but the super special 450 gram. Racket.
Exactly. And everyone wanted that dragon. We thought that if we were playing with this one, we'd never lose. But nothing to do. The rackets were much heavier. You didn't have the same control. Courts, nothing to do. There was no, it was hard court, concrete walls, very, very warm. We're sweating a lot more than with the window glasses. But it came through till now.
You're playing in those walls, of course, that can find the heat. And Pa, the other thing that's important to recall is that you actually went to Acapulco. And so you have actually played on the original paddle courts. Tell us about that experience.
Well, that was a great experience. It was in 1984, so it was 10 years after his first appearance in Marbella, and I'd been playing during those 10 years. And
you become good.
And I became a little better anyway. And I went on a trip invited by a friend who incidentally just passed away a couple of days ago. And we stayed at his house and got to know, went to a party with the next door neighbor, a guy named Ricky de Portanova, and his wife, Samantha. And they had a paddle tennis court, which I've never seen before and probably still doesn't exist anywhere. It was a outside court, of course. There was a tent, sort of a structure in case of extreme sunshine. And it was lighted at night by Klieg lights that you could normally associate with films, during films. So there's a very, very bright light. It was like being daylight in the court. And the seating beside the court was in a sort of a covered area with leather, expensive leather furniture, with waiters waiting in black tie, in air conditioned. This was air conditioned. Even if it was open, it was air conditioned, so that the people watching the match could not be too overly warm. And we'd have these games that were fun. And I one time was invited to play with the partner of Henry Kissinger, which was a big thrill for me because I was quite a fan of his. He seemed to enjoy playing with me. And so he'd call me up. He was on vacation nearby, and he'd call me up and says, "Victor, do you want to play today?" And I had this German accent, and I'd say, "Yes." And I said to him, "By the way, Henry, you've got a lot of people like to play with you, but you seem to like to play with me. Why is that?" He says, "Because I want to win." And he had this German accent, and it was really funny. But then these women would come and watch him because he was he wasn't particularly beautiful, but he was seductive by his brain and his charm. And the women flocked to him. It was really something to see. And they just abandoned me. I thought I was not too bad, but they totally abandoned, didn't pay attention to me at all. And just sat around and listened to Henry telling his stories about his career and various parts of his life. He was a very interesting man. So that's sort of my first big partner.
Well, let's say that is the joy of paddle being lived. All right. So, William, you are a great player. I've played with you a number of times. You have great touch. You have a huge amount of power. How would you describe yourself as a player? What animal would you use to describe William the paddle player?
I would like to think a lion.
A lion. Why a lion? Right. Why a female lion or a male lion?
Well, I hope a male. Well, because I'm quite aggressive on the court, meaning I'm an offensive player. I like to more likely being at the net and block the shots and keep being offensive rather than be defensive. So for that, you need to be quite quick, reactive, read the game, because it's obviously more tricky. You can be tricked by some shots, so you got to be very reactive.
Love it. Pa, what about you? What animal are you as a paddle player?
Well, there's the animal I am, and there's the animal I'd like to be. I'd say I'd be a fox.
Why?
Well, I fox a little bit sneaky and try to fool my opponent into thinking it's going one way and then taking him the other way. So I try to be deceptive.
Love it.
And sort of be deceptive. I sort of got to deploy ruses to get his attention elsewhere. I'm not quite sure why, but.
Well, anyway. You haven't been playing so much, of course, these days, but do you recall what was your favorite shot?
Yes, definitely. In the old days, the walls were very, very thick cement, though, outside the court. And there was also a wire, part of the side wall particularly. And there was always, there was never exactly a smooth surface. So there was a little ledge that sort of formed like a vertical going up and down the wall where the wire was joined to the cement. And that was a little space, maybe 1 inch, maybe sometimes a little more. And if you hit the ball into that place on the side wall where the net and the wire net and the cement joined, you didn't know where the ball was going to bounce out. It could bounce out straight or you bounce out sideways. And so that was a really great shot to be able to pull off. It's hard to do, but it's a great shot. And it is almost always a winner.
It reminds me of the tambour in real tennis.
Yes.
Which today in paddle, it doesn't happen, but it's called the El Pico in paddle today. It's much less pronounced, but you still want to catch that moment between the glass and the wiring, because right in there, you don't know which way it's going to go.
That's right. That was fun. And when you hit it, that it was really a great feeling.
Because back in your day, at least, when you hit that spot and it caught the wall, it could even come backwards towards the net.
Yes.
I remember.
It was a brilliant shot.
Love it. William, what about you?
I would say the Portres, to smash it out of the court.
Portres, the one that goes back wall and out by the 3-meter wall.
Exactly. You know, I've been playing more tennis than paddle, so you know, smash is an important shot. And I think quite powerful. Sometimes it works.
I can confirm. You certainly are, William. How about which shot would you like to improve on, and why? I mean, you're a very accomplished player, but which ones do you think of? This is one I could do better on.
Well, there's one definitely shot I need to improve is the bandeja. Which is not a natural shot when you're a tennis player, and very important when you play paddle. I was part of a tournament last week, and the number 50 in the world came and played an amateur tournament. And it was just so impressive to see him playing. And he was playing with a guy that had no clue. And he was going to take all his balls, and he had such a good bandeja. I always try to take the ball as soon as possible when it goes up in the air, so I don't let it, you know, come down in order to take the bandeja. So sometimes, you know, I just try to hit it on the fence slowly, but the bandeja makes much more damage in the opponent game. So definitely the bandeja.
Yeah, so you don't let it come down to your shoulder level. You kind of hit it a little higher, which means it's going to bounce up a little bit more. Love it. All right, Paul, what about you? If you think back to your career on the paddle court, what's the funniest thing that ever happened to you on a paddle court?
Well, maybe I could do this. I go back to the match with Kissinger. And I was running all around trying to get the balls back, and Kissinger... at one point, he was trying to get out, stay out of the way. He was trying to leave the coast clear for me to win the point. And one time he wasn't able to get out of the way fast enough, and the ball came and hit him right in the stomach. I cut it off.
Classic.
And he said, he looked up and he said, "Oh," he said, "that's the best shot I've made all day." Pretty good remark.
It's cute. Yeah, of course, we try to get out of the way of those balls. Not so easy. Hey, William, what about you? Do you have a funny shot that you can recall?
Well, sometimes you got some very funny shots because when you hit a lead or when you have to do a smash and you just hit it very hard and just hit lead and then make funny, you go on the, you know, you got to get, there's plenty of very funny moments. Or when you hit a smash and you don't hit it perfectly and it just bounces on the fence on top of the wall and not hitting the wall, then he has all those funny bounces and you have no clue where the ball goes. Sometimes it's very good, sometimes it's very bad. It just comes back easy for the opponent. So you have all those fun shots that makes paddle so entertaining.
I mean, at the end of the day, William, it feels like when you have those shots that happen, I feel all of a sudden the humility. Because you can't master that shot and you get stuck and you get, it's a little awkward
Exactly. I think those shots that makes paddle so funny, because you don't control everything and all those bounces can go anywhere. And now we play with golden points at 40 all. So, you know, one missed shot just can change all the course of the set.
Yeah, it's like that little one little shot, one little thing can absolutely change the direction.
Or a reflex. Right,
reflex. And so for you, William, in the paddle, you've been playing now for over 30 years, right? What would be the life lesson that paddle has brought to you?
It's never over. Sometime, you know, in tennis, when you have a smash, well, point is over 95% of the time. And paddle, you always have a chance. You just need to go for it. Even if someone hits a smash portress, which is getting out of the court, you can still run out of the court and get it back. Or when you hit the fence, you can have a bounce that helps you and not against you. So no matter how desperate the situation is, there's always a way to get back in the point and just never surrender.
I love it. It is never over. Pa, what about you? What's the life lesson that paddle brought to you?
Well, I was thinking about the fact that when in those early days of the paddle, we were so excited about it, and there were I remember we used to sit around and say, how can we make money out of this? This is such a fun game. How can we get it on television or get it promoted? Not so much on television, because there wasn't that prominent in those days, but do stuff to make paddle tennis game better known and more popular. And by the way, then this would get a lot of the sort of expatriate players and those who were looking for jobs, give them something to keep them going while they're in between games. And of course, we just sat around for hours and hours chewing this fat and how to do it. And there was the glass courts are what finally did it. That's what finally opened up paddle, really, to the grand public and the television and the tournaments that you can go and see. But when you only had a few meters of space available to watch a match, it was hard to draw a crowd. But now, of course, it's taking off, and I'm so glad. It took a long time, but it's finally taking off.
Beautiful. And all right, let's finish with one question, which is there any other sport that equals paddle in your mind, either to play or to watch? Pa?
Well, this is to my mind, it's the best of all the racket sports, really the best. And it kills me to see this pickleball that I've been watching in the United States now, which just seems to be trying to do what the paddle tries to do. But the pickleball is just not in the same league. And so I'm just out and out promoting our paddle tennis. Long may it live.
Amen. William, what about you?
I think it's just the perfect game between tennis and squash.
Because two games you play well.
I do like to play squash as well. But, I mean, it's really the in-between, because you've got some squash shot. I mean, when the ball is very low and bounces on the window and you got to take it back and try to do a lob, you need to change your wrist and do as a squash shot. So it's really the it's and with the glass windows as well, it's much easier to see, to watch, and you have those points that are very impressive when you look on YouTube's the highlights of all the pros playing all over. I mean, it's very nice. We have fun watching it. Enjoy it.
I certainly do too. Hey, you guys, thank you for coming on the Joy of Paddle podcast. A last word for your word on paddle. Pa.
Minner, thank you for doing this. Thank you for being a promoter of this sport that we all love. And I love having my children following in my illustrious field of footsteps.
Hey, William.
Having fun with paddle. It's really a great thing. I love it. Love watching you and seeing you and talking to you.
Brilliant. And William, what about you?
Well, I have a question for you now. You, Minter, how did you start into paddle and be so passionate? I know you came from tennis, but how did all the thing came up?
Well, so I'm going to tell you about why I've launched Joy of Paddle. And of course, there's a little bit of a hint to another book that was rather famous a long time ago. But what I think society is missing is reasons to commune, to get together. And it's a great sport. And I love the professional paddle league that's been launched in America because it has mixed doubles. And so you can see that it's a very social sport. People talk during the point. I feel like a game is half done if I don't have a cerveza, a beer, after the game. It's you play with a smile as opposed to tennis where you play with a grunt. And squash, you play with a, you're about to die on a squash court. Just for some reason, brings a smile to my face. And that's what I want to share and spread.
Wonderful, Minter. Thank you.
So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email or better yet, a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, vamos!
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.